Welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast, hosted by the Azure for Sports team at Microsoft.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Azure for Sports podcast. I'm Suzanne Tedrick, and as always, I'm joined by my Azure partner in crime, Mr. John Flynn. How is it going, John?
Going very well, Suzanne. How are you? Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Good to see you as well. It's been a minute. It's been a crazy, hectic summer.
Yes, it has. And unfortunately, we're in the tail end of it. But I'm excited to be recording another episode. Lucky number 13, I believe, right?
Lucky number 13, yes. and of course, with that, we decided let's do a new format. So we are hopefully going to be on video for this podcast. So fingers crossed.
Yes, indeed. I don't know if I should already automatically apologize to people. I have been told that I do have a perfect face for radio, so this may be breaking that medium here, but enough about us. I'm super excited for our guests on this one, Suzanne. This has been a long time coming for me, so I'm excited to get into this one today.
Oh, same here. And it's a pleasure for me to introduce Mr. Nick Zanotto and Brett Yorgi from EngageRM, doing phenomenal work in the data space for sports, media, and entertainment. Brett, Nick, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Absolute pleasure to be here, Suzanne. Thanks so much for having us. Excited to talk to both you and John about the work that we're doing and the exciting things that are happening from an Azure and Microsoft standpoint in the sport entertainment space.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you. Can't wait to have a chat with you, Suzanne and John, about what we're doing in the space. Thanks for having us.
You guys have been having such a whirlwind summer, too. And in fact, I believe last time we spoke, you had come off the tail end of three major conferences. Is that right?
Yeah, we've had a busy year. I mean, calendar year even, but busy summer. I'd say it started to kick off for us. We did a all-employee conference, an EngageRM conference down at our global headquarters of Melbourne for about a week. So I got to spend a couple weeks down with Brett and our team in Australia, which was really an exciting opportunity for us to share internally what our objectives are and the work that we're doing and align as a business. And then out of that, I've been back in New York for a few different things, including a conference recently for ALSD. We also were at Manchester for sports business and ticketing business conferences. And so it's been a very fun travel summer now that we're able to get back moving both national and international.
That's amazing. So why don't we kick off our conversation by you guys just introducing a little bit about yourselves and what exactly is EngageRM?
I'll kick that to you, Brett, to start with yourself and also probably a little bit about the business. As Brett's the founder, I usually like to take all the glory for his hard work.
Yeah, so Suzanne, we started the business in 1999 and really had other CRM systems. It was all around CRM, but it was other CRM systems until about 2002-03, and that was when Microsoft came into the market in Australia. And so we moved off those other solutions at that time, went to the Microsoft platform, and have been there since. So the evolution of the Microsoft Dynamics platform, but combined with all the things that have happened over the last couple of years with, you know, the other technology sort of applications that have come to the fore have been sensational. So it was probably around 2008 that we started our vertical approach, where we started to build out solutions, and that was with Tennis Australia with the Australian Open. We also at the time, and it was really moving from sort of box selling through to, you know, this vertical approach that brought about a job with Microsoft in Australia in regional local government, where we built out a customer service solution. And that customer service solution became a part of the customer service platform, or the citizen services platform, which is a global initiative by Microsoft at the time. And so the whole vertical thing continued from there. We went to professional sports in Australian rules football and National Rugby League and others. And a couple of years ago, Microsoft came to us and said, listen, we've got this co-sell program, a global co-sell program, and with your deep sort of vertical in sports, we'd like you to be involved. We got involved in that, one of five partners at the time, and that introduced us then into the US and UK, and it's really evolved since then to where we are today, which is great.
That's fantastic. And I guess one of the questions I had, because I was spending some time getting to know Engage RM a little bit better. It said that the company is born in sports. What was the motivations perhaps for going for that particular industry vertical?
I can start with that, and Nick's got a good story around where he came from in that space as well. When we started with Tennis Australia, there's a precinct in Melbourne, which is a sporting precinct, and there's, you know, Australian rules football, there's the Australian Open Tennis, there's the Melbourne Cricket Ground, which is a 100,000-seat stadium. And so to get started, we started with Tennis Australia, like I said, with a membership system. But I played a few games of football with the Collingwood Football Club, which is one of the football clubs in Australia, and they were across the road. So I went over and had a chat to them about how we could build out really a corporate environment for sports. And it was all around sponsorship, premium suites, you know, the community membership, all that type of thing. And they were really open to the conversation. We got the CIOs of both Tennis Australia and the Collingwood Football Club together. There was no real IP around any of this. And what we decided was that Microsoft would be the technology platform. We would then enable the process on top of the platform. And that's been the approach ever since. So combining those two things together, we absorbed some cost to get the thing started. And really it's evolved over then or since then with all of the other clubs that have come on board and to today where we've got, you know, Clippers, Lakers and others that have brought about, you know, knowledge from their environment. So really what we do is grab a hold of that technology and evolve with the technology, but enable the process on top.
Brett's one of the few people in the history of sport to transition from being a Aussie rules football player into a leader of a CRM company. Possibly.
It's a fantastic move as well. Look, I mean, I think so. One of the things that's interesting for me, and we can talk about Aussie rules in a minute, right? I mean, we can go there as much as we want,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Because that I think could be an episode on itself. Yeah. That is such a fantastic.
You've just started that. Do you know what the one means, though, John? You've started
the two. Give us the one.
The one and the two. What do they both mean?
Yeah, give us. I know what the two is. What's the one?
The one is 1 point.
I mean, they make it so difficult. It's just incredibly hard.
They make it really easy.
It's like, I mean, I've been to my fair share of Aussie rule football games in my time, and I can tell you, that's all I had. I didn't know what that is. When we do that, and everyone starts cheering, I'm up. I'm going, right? But it is, other than the shape of the ball, I have no basis for understanding what this is, which is probably safe enough, right? So one of the things that we've been working on, which is incredibly interesting, right? And you mentioned that the Clippers, the Lakers, is just the how much CRM is an integral part of any sports organization in terms of running the business, right? So for those of us out there that have a familiarity with it, we understand what it drives. We understand the importance of it, the heartbeat that it controls for an organization's selling efforts. But for those of the viewers out there and listeners out there who don't quite understand what CRM, in specifically in sports, is, would you mind giving us just a quick 101 overview of what CRM in sports specifically entails?
Yeah, I'll start, and then Brett, please fill in any gaps that I leave open. But you're right. I mean, you know, you look at revenue for any organization, it's kind of the lifeblood. And for sport, I'd say, you know, the unique pieces of it, a lot of that comes into ticketing revenue, which involves a mass amount of volumes of transactions, whether it be individual tickets or group ticket season, ticket / memberships, premium. And you look at the elements of all the things, all the areas of the organization is going to drive revenue. In addition to ticketing, you have your partnerships, your food and beverage, your concessions. And so for all the isolated instances and transactions and experiences that each fan have within any sports team, you know, what CRM provides is this global overview of being able to understand who our customers are, how they're engaging with our brand, and what's important for them. So on the macro level, I think it really is, as much as anything, it is, you know, an area to store data and leverage the use of process. It's as much as anything as a fan engagement tool at its core, of being able to connect an organization and give global views of fans, audience, clients, et cetera. I think going back to the micro and how teams are leveraging it, you know, you go to back to those individual departments and what focuses at least in the Engage or M piece, but also overall, I would say with any CRM instance that's deployed within a team, is really how do we increase efficiencies for business processes? You know, a lot of going back to that volume piece of a sports team, there's so much of operations that come within a, you know, relatively small staff for the amount of volume of work that needs to be done. And so the being able to have efficient business processes and streamline and connect each step of a process and connect a department that connects into an organization, the more we can create and enhance the efficiencies of process throughout an organization, it allows for a higher increase of productivity, a much greater increase of revenue opportunities, and really provides our clients with a better overall outcome of how they operate as a business.
Yeah, that's awesome. One of the properties we work with, they call it their engine room, right? They call it their CRM tool, their engine room. And there's a stark difference between people who understand that CRM, take the engine room analogy, but also the output of a CRM being used, as you're saying, in ticketing sales, in the revenue generating aspects of it, that's kind of the table stakes, right? You've got to do that, you've got to do it well, and you've got to do it easy, and people have to be able to enact and activate that. But what else can we do with the data that we get from it? So those organizations, those sporting organizations, Nick, and you'd say the word fan engagement, right? Using that data as fan engagement, because how we interact with someone, right? Say it's even on a corporate ticket sales perspective, right? How that interaction comes back in a positive or a negative light dictates how future engagements should go. So how do you see a CRM tool really laying out that next best action? That should I be calling this person? Should I be entering this market? Right? Do you see that playing a role in that at all?
Brett, I'll leave to you on that, because I think there's a couple of pretty exciting use cases and conversations that we've had with a handful of different teams as it relates to community engagement overall, how we're connecting with fans. You know, how do you engage with fans that live halfway across the world, right? They're probably not buying tickets from you, but I think there's some really interesting places. If you can figure out how they can influence audience and connect to your organization, it changes the scope of which you're looking at leveraging information.
Sure.
And to your point, John, I think what happens is within a sports organization, and if you think of CRM, you know, in a finance organization or an insurance organization, it's a really specific sort of area that you're focusing on. Whereas in sports, it's like you've got 20 businesses under one roof, and they've all got to then, you know, work together with a single source of data. And that's where there can be challenges, because, you know, the community people are dealing with really community programs and that type of thing. And then you've got the participation people, where we've got, you know, family days and kids academies and all that type of thing. Then you've got partnerships that are really focused around, you know, multi-year deals. And then you've got premium, where it's maybe casual suites and ticketing and all that type of thing. So you've got lots of different areas of the business that are leveraging this single source of data. So you can end up with sort of disparate systems managing all this really quickly, and that becomes obviously a problem. And so what we've tried to do is to make sure that if there's something in a spreadsheet or if there's a process that needs to be automated, that's what we want to bring into the system. Right. You know, and, you know, we've got examples of, for example, a corporate network. So we had one of our clubs come to us years ago where they said, look, what we want to do, we have this corporate or coterie network of people, and we want to make sure that we, you know, identify these people and give them the ability to communicate with each other within our club environment. And they have functions and all that sort of thing. What we did then was build into a portal environment, a LinkedIn type experience. So people could go into that environment, connect with each other. What we would do is then make sure that the outcome of the interaction was actionable in the CRM. So the sales team could pick up the conversation. So when it comes around to retention, renewal, and all that sort of thing, we've got that covered from an action process, if that makes sense. So, you know, you because everything we're trying to do is to make the data actionable. It's first party data, it's interactions with, you know, a whole range of different people. And what we want to do is make sure that that then, you know, that interaction is actionable within the system, either in outbound marketing communications or, you know, a whole range of things around the way we communicate with people. And to Nick's point, I think that the next evolution of this and the way we're trying to leverage the technology is around some of the Web3 stuff. And that really then moves us from just ticket interactions and interactions in regards to, you know, coming to an event or buying merchandise or that sort of thing, but now really incentivizing people to be an influencer of the brand, consume content, yes, share content on the social networks and become that, you know, that person that becomes the influencer. So we see a huge opportunity with that because we see it as in a lot of our deployments where that data is really not leveraged at all. And the main leverage of the data is out to, you know, Google AdWords or Facebook AdWords and things like that. Whereas they've got this, you know, huge audience of people that would be more than happy to, you know, to share their experience as a supporter. And that becomes a really interesting story that I think is starting to evolve with some of the Web3 technologies.
100% agree with you, right? I mean, you think of a fan is its own influencer network, right? And then whoever they are linked with is their own influencer network, right? So, and I think we're looking at a lot of, and you said the magic word is actionable, right? So Suzanne and I know, right? We speak to organizations that have data that just sit in lakes and sit in warehouses, sometimes just sit in disparate databases across a slew of on-prem and in the cloud databases that do nothing, right? But they can't get rid of it because they're scared. If they get rid of it, they'll do nothing with it. So they do nothing with it, but they still have it, right? But at least they have it. But so one of the things that's super interesting, right? And I think Web3 is spot on, right? As people look at loyalty as maybe just say the dirty word of the moment, NFT, right? If you look at NFT as a utility providing mechanism that you can take that influencer network that you have and then the network linked to you has and so on and so forth, and you provide utility based upon how you interact with the brand, whether that's directly through the first party data or indirectly as you start influencing out. If you capture how someone is talking about you to who they're talking to and how they're talking about you, that's of value. So reward them for doing that, right? Even if the sentiment isn't positive, they're still talking about you. No news is bad news, right? So you have the ability then to go in and action a customer service call to them or something like that, right? And I think you're spot on, Brett, with that. Web3 is really expanding the sphere of influence, but having control over it, right? Understanding where your conversations are happening and where your touch points are happening. I'm interested to get a little bit of insight from you guys on how you see the Web3, right? The buzzword of the moment. And we'll have some more that pop up during the episode, I'm sure, right? But where you see the Web3 and the fan, specifically in sports, intersecting, where's that sweet spot where the fan goes, yep, Web3, I'm taking hold of that. We're not there yet, right? But what does that look like in your guys' mind?
The good news, John, is that Brett spends his whole time focused on Web3 and where we're going to, and it tries to weave it into every conversation, even if you know. So I think you found your man for Web3.
Look, to your point, NFT, I think, is a dirty word. I mean, NFT has always been a widget, you know, to me that is just just that, a widget. But the technology underlying, I think, is the really important part. When we talk about cradle to grave, we talk about birth to death, and we talk about every interaction from someone coming to their first family day at the Staples Center through to, you know, becoming a part of an academy, then moving on to being a real fan and then becoming a corporate partner and all, you know, that journey of that person through to the way that we deal with them is one thing. Identity has always been an issue with CRM systems in general. Yep. You know, the way people put their first name, last name, you know, the people change their names, they get married and change their names, they change their email addresses all the time, they change their mobile numbers, all those things are always changing. And it becomes hard because you end up with duplicate data. And it's always been, I think, an issue with CRM systems in general that can be something that does turn people away. And they think then, we've got to get this data warehouse, you know. So now all of a sudden, we've got this data warehouse instead of the CRM. And I can understand how that comes about. What I think Web3 does, and Microsoft are really leading in some ways with this, is all around decentralized identity and that ability to understand the digital identity with what we call verifiable credentials. So instead of, you know, the need to put my name and everything in, all I work up and tap and go with my phone and everyone knows who I am. It removes a lot of complex integrations, but it also incentivizes me to do things. This is where I think the NFT bit becomes really important, because what we can do is we can incentivize people with trophies that have, like you said, underpinning entitlements based on the fact that I've, you know, consumed some content or I've received communications. I think one big area of this into the future is going to be we're going to have to pay people to receive communication, incentivize them to receive it, and then incentivize them to share it and to do other things with that data, but they're going to be able to be rewarded for doing that. And that's where that whole loyalty part of it becomes really important. And we can have then people in Zimbabwe, you know, talking about our club in Los Angeles and being an influencer. They're never going to come to a game, but they're an influencer of the brand, and we're incentivizing them to do that. The next part of that that I see is really important is that, because the next part of it is really then having them understand community programs and being able to put into a sustainability program at the, in the Amazon or whatever it might be. Once we provide them with that, you know, that incentive, then they can become a part of this community that we're building. One of the things, one of the areas we're looking at with the metaverse is then, you know, a locker room. You know, let's keep it with sport, and we have a locker room, and it's a metaverse type locker room, and we can then put sponsorship details, like, you know, might have a car in there, an Audi, and you can go in and configure the car and request an experience in that car from your locker room in the metaverse. You know, so there's a whole range of things that come about from this evolution of technology that we see as really exciting into the future.
It really is. You know, you look at how we engage and interact on the web or with the team or with the products we buy, right? And that, and that transfers of data of our behavior and how important that is. And I think Web3 just enables a lot more incentive for the user to be engaged. And in many ways, I think sports is on the forefront. You may not think of it in that context, but it can be because of this, you know, digital virtual locker room concept in ways that you have your fans being able to engage with your brand, your partner's brand, and being able to advocate on behalf and create this larger extensive community for an organization is going to be really interesting to see this next version of how sports teams leverage. I think NFT is a bad word, so I'll go with the Web3.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, look, Suzanne, I'm going to say it, and I apologize. There's never been a better time to be a sports fan. There really hasn't, right? I mean, I've been saying it ever since we started this podcast. And I think Web3 is a large part of that, right? I mean, I think it really truly gives real access, right? Whereas before you could have these programs and they felt kind of fake and phony because they were, right? But this gives real access and utility behind that access being a payment, right? Like you said, right? I'm going to pay somebody for their loyalty. I'm going to pay somebody for their information, but I'm going to pay them in something, in a currency that's meaningful to them. To your point, the metaverse or the locker room example, right? I'd love to see inside of a locker room, right, when there's a win and everyone's celebrating and stuff like that, right? But that should be an exclusive thing that you earn, right? And how do you, and we have, to your point, not to belabor it, right? I think we have the underpinnings of being able to do just that in a really authentic way that brings the fan closer, right? That keeps that fan close. But again, Suzanne, I apologize. There has never been a good time.
And I think that to that point where you're incentivizing, John, I reckon that the other part of that is that, you know, with GDPR and CCPA and the New York, you know, regulatory arm that's coming out, it's becoming more and more relevant that you're not going to be able to go in and do this whole headless thing, you know, where we go in and we get a device ID and we sort of track someone. And you can see there's a lot of websites, Brave is one of them, that, you know, really do block all this type of thing. But even Google and Apple and you know, and others are doing the same thing by blocking access to this. So then that direct communication becomes even more important, you know, that ability to communicate directly and incentivize that that communication directly, you know, and it can be, I mean, what we don't want to do is add another problem or add another cost to the club, because that's obviously a problem. But if what you're doing is offsetting a cost that you would have spent on lookalike audiences in, you know, AdWords, to, you know, the ability to incentivize people directly to communicate and then share content and influence the brand, then it's a cost neutral scenario, and you're really then incentivizing real fans that might be in Zimbabwe,
yes,
or Brazil or wherever they are.
To support John's notion that now never been a better time to be a sports fan, which I would agree with probably in every stage of the last 100 years, there's never been a better time than right now. And I think you're right. And part of that's like sports teams for the longest time, and especially over the last decade to maybe 2 decades, have focused on access as incentive for purchasing it. And more of an in-game experience, right?
Yeah.
So whether it be you're limited by 18,000 to 100,000 seats based on the sport, based on the stadium. And then from there, you know, it still is if you go look at exclusive clubs or suite, right? It's how do we give this access to this, you know, people who are paying top dollar? Well, this kind of flips that whole model on its side and takes it into a, well, how do we provide access to those that aren't even able to get into the building? And then how can we incent and motivate and engage with that audience in a much different way than sports teams have ever looked at it? And that to me is really exciting and interesting, both from a technology standpoint and also just from the team aspect of how they're leveraging their brand.
And just to add to that too, as we move towards things like the metaverse and those areas, there's a group of people out there that, are not wanting to go to a game or to a venue, but they'd love to be a part of a brand. And the metaverse is that provides that anonymity that they, you know, they really do sort of want to have. And so what we're able to do now is to really communicate with people where they want to communicate, how they want to communicate, when they want to communicate. You know, it becomes a really powerful story that you can sort of treat people how they want to be treated, which I think is another area of this that becomes really powerful.
Our objective is to talk enough Web3 to get this podcast changed. The Web3 for sports podcast or the Azure for Web3 sports podcast, however you guys want to.
I don't know. We keep up with this. We may be doing the Azure for Sports Web4 podcast before long.
Seriously. You're talking about something that's, I think, really crucial for sports teams and leagues in getting that data to be as granular and to be as customizable to their experiences of how they want to experience their interactions with you, and having a solid CRM system and a CRM strategy, having that's going to be incredibly powerful. And I think that you both have talked about the benefits that come, with having CRM. Can you talk, I guess, a little bit about how do you envision that a CRM strategy can be helpful in a number of different areas, such as your ticket sales or sponsorship activations? And what does good strategy look like? If I were someone that was going into this, what are the tent poles that I need to have in place within my organization to be successful in execution?
For me, I've always looked at this, and I spent about 14 years on the team side. So I feel like, between what I do now with the CRM pieces of it and then the team side, a good little insight into how I would always approach that question of strategy, right? And so strategy for me starts with the output of what we're looking to do as an organization, right? And that can be as it relates to OKRs that are upcoming in the calendar year, in the quarter. But, if you take a step back, it's okay. We're at this moment of time in our organization. Where are we going to, and how can we leverage data to help us get there? And to me, that's the foundation and blueprint for how you're going to put together a CRM strategy, right? That output's really critical to figuring out what inputs are important and what processes are critical to be able to capture data and make sure that you have your organization aligned in obtaining information that you're going to be able to use, right? It goes back to, I think John talked about the silo and disparate systems you have or where your data stored. All having information and having data does nothing, right? If you can't leverage it. And so where really that strategy comes through, what are we trying to accomplish as an organization? What data points do we need to make sure that we're obtaining so that we can actually execute a strategy. And so it really starts with, where's our organization going? What's important to us? It could be related to specific projects. It could be related to, if you look at our partner, the Clippers, are building a new facility here in Los Angeles. There's a lot of things specific that they're looking at their CRM strategy that's going to achieve their goals for leveraging that new stadium. Different goals they had 5 years ago, I'm assuming much different goals than they'll have 5 years from now. And so for us to align with that strategy and make sure that we enable processes so that they're able to succeed and successfully execute that strategy is really critical for us as a business, but also for our partners.
And I think to add to that, Suzanne, what we've tried to do is then enable the process on top of that. So the strategy is put in place. And what we use then is that technology layer to enable the process. And if we use ticket sales as an example, what we did was build what we call a lead allocation automation process. Now, this is where over the last few years, Microsoft have become so powerful, because what we can do then is use Power Virtual Agents as a chat service to be, a hand raiser on the web. We can use customer voice to go out and, get forms in venues or forms from surveys and things like that. And what we're trying to do is capture that first party data as best we can, segment it into, lists that would be specific to certain types of either ticketing, premium, different areas of the business. And then what we do is automate the allocation of each of those leads to the appropriate person with the proper skill set that can then take action with that lead. And that automation on top of that is what we've built out with our clients over the last few years. And that part becomes really important, because if it's manual, there's every chance there's mistakes and people are not, people come in the next morning and all of a sudden I haven't got enough leads to work on that day. So we're replenishing with a service every night to make sure that, that John's got his 200 leads to start with the next day. And then leveraging the things like sales insights and conversation intelligence, we can put some scoring around those leads. So as when John does get his new 200 leads for the day, they're categorized in order, and really there in a way that is giving me the best opportunity to sell in that environment, which is really powerful. So this is that part of us leveraging Microsoft technology with a process that we've built on top of it. That's the bit that we want to make sure we can do.
And that's brilliant. That's truly, because, just thinking about it, getting that information, getting those insights, but what should I be acting on first, and having automation in that process, not making it so manual. It's something that's incredible and a powerful tool for many people. And you kept mentioning, using Microsoft, and obviously John and I are biased, but we love that.
Incredibly smart decision makers. I think that really.
My question, becomes, it's like, well, me and John and Microsoft are no doubt grateful that you've selected us as partners. We know that there's so many other technology partners that are out there. What was it about the Microsoft technology stack that said, this is where we need to be?
I think in the first part of it was Outlook. Back in 2002, when we started in the first part, Outlook was the email client, and Microsoft came into the market with that as the Outlook client. So that was really the start of it. And I think that what we've seen evolve since then is a whole range of different areas. Microsoft Teams and what they deliver, even through now to Teams telephony and those areas have evolved at such a rate, especially over the last couple of years, obviously with the pandemic, that's brought about a lot of change in that space. But the Power Apps and the Power Automate flows that sit underneath all that, that become the glue of all of these different areas of the Microsoft environment. There's not another solution in the world that I'm aware of anyway. And I've got to say, I'm a bit of a Microsoft fan as well, but there's no other product in the world that I'm aware of that brings all of this together the way that Microsoft are now. And I think that what it gives us the ability to do is not worry about the technology, not worry about Azure, because that's all perfect. GDPR and all those things around security and everything that goes with that, we don't have to worry about that. We worry about enabling process. And that's where it's really important for us, because That's what we do.
If you go back to
good insight, right? I mean, you guys are clearly very smart because of what you do and how you do it. But I think that's a very good insight and somewhat overlooked, right? For those sport tech companies that build on the Microsoft platform, is that what you just said, Brett, right? So the Azure cloud takes care of all the underlying busy work, so you don't have to, right? So you can get used to, you can get down to value add versus, right, I've got it, we've already done it, right? I mean, so take advantage of that. And I'm sorry, Nick, I did cut you off there, but I just wanted to double up on that. I think one of the things that we see, Suzanne and I, to a few amazing firms and some firms that had to sort of give up the ghost a little bit, but kind of do everything from scratch, right? They didn't take advantage of to your point, a technology platform or a technology suite of platforms that have already done the grunt work for you that you then come in and you layer value on top.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean that aligns very much with where I was going, John, of just the overall value that the Microsoft ecosystem has for a sports organization for that reason, right? It's easy to get caught into, okay, let's go find out the best CRM and let's go find the best chat agent and let's go find the best sales insight or visualization tool. And there's so much that Microsoft does to connect the platform and the technology, and it allows us, I mean, it's a little bit chicken or the egg. Like, I think for our sake, and I don't want to speak for Brett at the brains of the organization, you know, it allows us to enable and automate processes that so much Microsoft's already doing the legwork on, and it makes us look really, really smart. As smart as we think we are, I think it makes us look even a little bit more smart. And so I couldn't agree more of the value that Microsoft brings to an organization that's ultimately as great as and as big as the brands are, they're still small to medium-sized businesses, right? And so the lack of resources that they're going to have as an organization to be able to leverage all of the data and tech stack that they are operating with, to me, it's a no-brainer in how far and advanced and evolved Microsoft has established the technology to help these organizations out.
And it's a good.
Yeah, I'm happy you say that.
Just to add to Nick's point there, what was an early sort of thing that we realized was that the security in the investment that, you know, that these clubs make in Microsoft, us enabling them to leverage that investment in a whole range of new ways with the CRM part of it became really important. And then it even advanced to F&O and Business Central and you know, the other finance applications. So there was this then, you know, whole environment of a sports organization that was sitting there. And then you've got things like, you know, the SQL, the Azure a data factory, and you know, these other things then that can be used for integration points so there's the, even from a Dynamics perspective, and it's a bit technical, but the things like a virtual environment, virtual entities and things where you can have big stores of data that then feed into the CRM, and you can still take and enable process from these areas, but you're not then clogging up everything in the CRM. So there's a whole range of things that have become really powerful.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm so glad, Nick, that you said sports organizations aren't always the largest organization in the world, right? Their brands far outweigh the reality of who puts that product on the field, the diamond, the pitch, the what have you, right? So it does not only complete a sports industry, how much does the ease of use, ease of getting to operate on sort of the earliest possible, because they don't have a staff of 500 developers come in, or even 5 developers that could come in and do this. How much does that play into your decisions as well?
I would say a lot. Chris, you broke up a little there, but you know, especially recently as we've just brought on a new partner in the Milwaukee Bucks and even, you know, prior to that, the Portland Timbers. And we've got, you know, new systems where we have reps being able to get up and going on day one. And so the notion that between what Microsoft's doing, what EngageRM's doing, and the partnership that we have had over the years, we're now at a place where not only are we helping with, you know, the the macro strategy, long-term building out of their CRM strategy. There's the short-term of just we're making their lives easier in the moment. They bring a rep in and we can easily get them up, going, trained, and helping to impact their organization immediately. And the value that that has, you know, I led ticket sales teams for many, many years. And the notion that I could get a rep up and going within hours, days is amazing. And you have that ability to now put out a process to the entire staff that they can easily execute and make sure that there's uniformity in the way that they're using CRM. It's really important and impactful for the organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well said. I think that time to value is increasingly important, right? I mean, I think the fact that, just to your statement, right? But you can have a solution implemented and up and running and someone using it the day over the day after a week of is still measured in wow factor, right? Which I think is super cool. So I just want to go back to something, Brett, you were talking about earlier, right? And Suzanne's question on strategy. And you started in tennis Australia. You've been talking about some of the Clippers and the Lakers here. Is a CRM strategy the same regardless of the discipline of the sport that you're engaged with? So is basketball the same as tennis, is the same as football, for example?
Absolutely. Absolutely the same. And I think that this is one of the advantages of this environment that Microsoft are building out, that it's transferable. You know, like I could work with the Clippers and then go and work with the Chicago Bears. Or I could go and work with someone else. And the platforms and the processes are the same. They're the same for, you know, those sports. And I think this is one of the powerful areas of the whole environment, because then all of a sudden training becomes a lot easier. And if you think of this, there's two ways to look at this, I think. And the first way is within the organization. So we talked before about, you know, there being sort of 20 different businesses within the one organization. A lot of times there's transfer between different business units. I might start with premium, then I go over to partnerships, then I might go to ticketing, and I might go. That learning curve is really, really quick because I know the platforms, I know what we're doing, and we're all working in this one platform. The learning curve becomes really powerful. But that extrapolates out, I think, anyway, to then across, like you said, John, sports organizations, because once I go to another place and, yeah, look, I use Dynamics, I use Teams, I use, you know, those areas, it's all then just about the process enablement on top. And you know, that's the bit, obviously, we've spoken about that we think that we've sort of added as value. But yes, I think that the environment itself is really important, and I think it is absolutely cross sports workable.
And to expand upon that and probably tie us back to where we started of this born in sport concept, for us, I think we see ourselves as conduit of best practices, you know, multi-sport, multi-cultural, multinational, and the way that we operate as a business. And I think that's a really fun place for us to live in, is understanding what Australian Open Tennis Australia is doing, what the Los Angeles Lakers are doing, and making sure that we can help collaborate and push for and evolve and innovate our technologies along with organizations' technologies and processes to make sure that we're not only taking care of their needs today, but helping direct and evolve where they're going to in the future. And I think for us, like, that's a really critical piece to being a part of this global sport community. That's a really exciting part of EngageRM that we'd only be able to do with the help of Microsoft technology.
And just to add to that too, the while sports in general are very competitive, obviously, you know, like in basketball and whatever else, whatever sport it might be, the clubs are really competitive, but our experience has been that from a technology perspective, they're really collaborative. You know, like they really do work together, because the benefits to them are really their daily routines that they turn up to, and they want to make them as easy as possible. So, you know, if we're going to be able to enable process for them, the competitive part on ground is really just irrelevant. It's the technology bit. They don't see that as IP of the business. And one of the things that I always talk about when we go into a club is we want to show you all the things that we've learned over time. How you use and leverage those things, that'll be your people, you know. And we see it, you know, you could have three clubs lined up and one will be using it just absolutely across the board and flat out with everything, because accountability is driven and, you know, you've got people there that understand the benefits of all this. and then you might have the next one that's a bit less, and then the next one doesn't even use it, sort of thing. So it's a there's that. But I think, though, I remember we had a user group probably a number of years ago now, where we brought everyone into a room, and there's always, you know, thoughts that maybe those things might not go as well as expected. And we got everyone into this, to one of our clubs. And what we found was that once everyone got together, the clubs that maybe weren't using the platform the way they could were hearing from the clubs that were using it the way that they could. And it ended up, they all walked away thinking, God, either we've got to do things better, or, you know, this is great. We know we're on the right track. And so it was a really, really productive couple of days with the different business units, because they were in their business units. You know, you had partnerships, you had marketing, you had ticketing, all the different areas that they were able to collaborate together, and the other benefit of that was they went away from that meeting communicating with each other all over the place, which was even better. You know, like it was great.
That's fantastic. I mean, that knowledge share is so very important, where you can learn, you know, from one another. I mean, theoretically, they're kind of competing against each other in various forms, but there's something to be said about sharing those common experiences. It's like, huh, maybe we should steal that. I don't know. we should have been doing that, you know, a year ago. There's power in that. So I have to ask, it sounds like you guys have a blast, to be quite honest, with all of the different teams that you get to work with. But what is the fun part of being a sports tech company? What's been the most enjoyable aspect?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, there's so much that for us, I think how many businesses are you going to go in and to help them with something that has such a visceral emotional connection to their fans and audience, right? And so there's just a piece of knowing that we participate in that's really exciting. I think for us, we've been very fortunate to have great partners globally in that respect. I think, you know, it helps us attract talent that are people that are passionate about sports as well. And so for the internal components of it, I think we have a very healthy culture that all have a strong feelings and support of sport. A lot of our business is based in Australia, so it goes back to that Aussie rules football experiences where, you know, when I joined the company, there was a lot of conversation around organizations that I didn't even know were organizations, and still struggling to learn some of my Australian basketball teams, the team names. You know, it's a little bit unfair because for the most part, they're all pretty well versed on the American teams and the brands that we provide. It's not as easy when you start talking about the Rabbitohs or the Brisbane Bullets or Broncos. I'll probably mess them up right now. So, being able to work in that passionate industry is really important for us. And then, you know, it's not bad when we get to go visit clients and get to participate and enjoy some of the fruits of their labor, I guess ours as well, but to be able to see the impact that they have in local communities and with the fans that are at the games, I think that's really special for us.
Yeah, I've got two answers for this, Susan. One of them is my sad life, and my sad life means that, you know, I like turning up to these clubs and just hearing a problem, so as we can find a solution to the problem. That's my sad life. But the other part of this is our staff, and I think that there is no doubt that sport is sexy. You know, it's a vibrant place to be, and there's lots going on, and there's lots of action and things like that. But I think, though, from, you know, if we talk about our software development and our professional services and all that sort of thing, you're really able to put forward cutting edge technologies for people to work on. And I think that's a really good space for them to be in, because they know they're going to be leveraging the latest from Microsoft or from, you know, other technologies that we deal with, and that's really good for them as a person, for their growth and that type of thing. So to get people involved in the business has been reasonably it's not easy, but I think that once they are involved, they start to see the benefit that it's not the sexy bit's good, the technology bit for them is really powerful too, though. So
no, Brett, when you said my sad life, I'm like, that sounds like something I would like. I'm that person, you know. I see the beauty in the challenge of it. So like, I love hearing that. So I don't think there's anything sad about that at all.
I also think that there's definitely a cool factor there as well, and I agree with you, right? That the cool factor gets a lot of people interested, right? But it's the real, it's not an easy industry, and it's not easy being in an organization that services that industry, right? Because there are so many moving parts to it, and there is so many challenges that come with that, and that's part of the enjoyment, right? I often say, if you're bored working in sports, then go look in the mirror, because that's probably where the problem is, right? And I think that what we do, to your point, Nick, right, we touch an industry that touches millions of people, right? We don't have a direct influence all over those millions of people, but we're doing something that has, right? And to me, that's incredibly fulfilling. I can't think of any other industry that I've ever worked in that has been as fulfilling, right? At the end of the days, when you put your toes up and you decide that that's the day, it's just been a good day, right? Because you've been doing something that really matters to a lot of people, which is super cool. I think that's awesome. So I think I've got one more question for you guys, and it's a super easy one. And hopefully my internet doesn't conk out on this one as well. But what's any sneak peek? What's next for Engage RM? Give us a little bit of a tidbit of the future here.
Non-Web3 based.
I can kick off with that. I can kick off with that because as you'll, I'm sure, realize by now that it's going to be in relation to our mobile app and how we're going to manage identity and Web3 to evolve what would be seen in sports venues, entertainment, media, all those areas, which we think is really super exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, from a business perspective, we're just getting started here in the US and even in the UK markets. So we're going to continue to do well and dominate what we've done in Australia. But from a local, for at least for the three of us outside of Brett, from a US presence standpoint, I mean, we've been very fortunate in adding on a handful of clients over the last couple of years. And I think what you'll see is our continued success to coinciding with Microsoft's continued success within this industry, and see that partnership really evolving and taking on new and exciting forms over the coming years, where we'll grow pretty successfully together in that space. And we're excited to be here to speak with you guys today, and also where we're going to as partners. And think there's a ton of opportunities for us to continue to grow.
Agreed. Well said, mate. I mean, we have a ton of fun together, because we're on a mission, and you're tightly aligned to that mission, right? And we truly believe that the cream does rise to the top, right? And working with you guys is an absolute pleasure as well. So thank you for your continued and very deep partnership with us.
Thank you. Thank you both for your time today. Yeah. Thank you guys for the partnership. We really love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh.
We're the lucky ones, so thank you for choosing us. That's amazing. And to echo John's point, it's a pleasure to go to bat with you, to use a sports phrase.
Is that a baseball bat, Susan, or a cricket bat?
Depending on what country we're in.
American baseball. I'm sorry. I'm very U.S. centric. I apologize. I'll get better. If people want to learn more and keep up with what you're doing, where is the best place for them to go?
Our website has got a lot of information on the work we have done and the work we are doing. EngageRM.com would be the best place for anyone to find out more on how our technologies are helping our partners and how we're helping to extend the Microsoft platform.
Yep, and reach out on on LinkedIn and things like that. Yeah. If people want to directly communicate with us, more than happy to discuss even that could be with partners, or it could be with clients or whoever it is. Happy to have a chat about what we do and how we do it and the benefits we see in what we have with our relationship. I think it's all good communications.
Awesome.
You owe me a Coke, John.
Yes, I do. Yes, the guilty as charged. Got it. Well, guys, thank you so much. I mean, this has been, I could probably go on for another couple of hours, but I don't think that that's going to be the best use of your time here. But again, thank you for this. It's been fun talking to you guys. And one thing that I will leave is that's one, and that's two, right? So yeah, that's all we need to know. Here we go. That's my
keep
learning.
In mind, though. Keep in mind, though, John, it's 1 point, and that's 6 points.
Here we go. 1 point, 6 points. Right between the uprights. It's between the uprights. There's no. It's look, we're not going to have an Aussie rules conversation, even though I said we probably should. But they have these polls. Go look at it on YouTube, and you tell me that makes sense. Come on now.
Well, with that, we'll bring our episode to a close, and everyone has homework to do. But it's been a real pleasure, Nick and Brett, to have you here today. Thank you so much for your time. And that brings us to our close. But we welcome your feedback on this episode and any other topics that you might be interested in hearing about for future episodes. Until next time, we'll see you later.